many of us wish we had a manual that came out the same time our kid did. Here's how you do it. Here's what you don't do. Here's how you don't repeat what your parents did. And I think a lot of us just, we bump along and we do the best we can.
Welcome to Keystone Conversations, our podcast on the topics and issues important to the Keystone family. Our hope is to give insight, wisdom, and resources as you press on to know and follow Jesus. My name is Brent Minter. I am the lead pastor of Keystone, and I'm super excited to kind of come back with our Keystone Conversations podcast. We took a little break over the summer as we kind of have, we had a lot of things going on, and our first episode is with a guest that kind of ended kind of maybe even the first semester with us. I have with us today Dr. Mark Mayfield. Dr. Mayfield, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me. It was fun to see you guys early this year.
Yeah. So if you, there's going to be a lot of people listening who, maybe some who came to our equipping event, and then a lot who didn't get the opportunity to have that. But I, so I want to introduce you a little bit and give a little bit of discussion about what we talked. We can kind of set up what we talked. And then kind of the idea is to come from a great equipping event we had, which was creating a culture of mental and emotional health and spiritual health in your home. And so Mark was the perfect person to do that, because this is a little bit of introduction with Mark. Mark is an author. He has written multiple books. He's a speaker. He's a leadership coach, a counselor, and a professor. I feel like you wear a lot of hats, Mark.
I do, but they're all kind of connected, all around mental, emotional, and spiritual health. So
yeah,
it works.
I love hanging out with you because I also hear some of the other ideas, the things that you are working on. But I mean, from a credibility perspective, you are a professor at Colorado Christian University, where you work to help in the counseling department. I don't know the technical terms to say that, to train up counselors.
I'm assistant professor of counseling, so we help train up the next generation of counselors to be integrationists, integrating faith and mental health.
I love it. And so you're an author. I've read one of your books, and you've spoken at Keystone, and you're a leadership coach and counselor. And that's actually how I met you, Mark, coming to a season where it's like, I need to process. Me and my wife need to process this. And we came to you as a coach and saying, hey, you work with lead pastors. You know us weirdos. And we we have to work on our own souls and our own marriages. And so that's a commitment for me and Carrie, as to be healthy before the Lord and before each other. And so when we need help, we get help. And so that's how I interact with you. And you become a friend. And now you become a friend of Keystone. And so I'm so thankful for you, Mark.
Well, that's what I love about what I get to do, especially as a coach, you know, get to work with great people like you guys. And, you know, it's fun to work in the realm of helping leaders be better leaders. And, you know, so it's that, you know, that ripple effect that you, as you get healthy and remain healthy, you get to help those around you too. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I love it. So you came to Keystone. So thankful that you came. It was such a blessing. You spoke to our staff on an afternoon, and then you came back and did a general equip with us. So the content that you walked us through is creating a culture of mental, emotional, and spiritual health at your home. And man, in our world, that feels like a topic or a title for something like a lot of people need. So give us an idea of, I mean, not everyone's able to be there. Give us a 2 or 3 minute concept of why that topic and some of the, maybe just the ideas that you brought to our time.
Yeah, well, I mean, the topic is something that I think developed out of just the last 15, 20 years of doing what I'm doing and recognizing that many of us wish we had a manual that came out the same time our kid did, you know, and, here's how you do it. Here's what you don't do. Here's how you don't repeat what your parents did. Here's how you recognize, you know, and I think a lot of us just, we bump along and we do the best we can. Yeah. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard that as an excuse in counseling for families. Hey, I'm just doing the best I can. And that's like, great, you're right. But right now you're being confronted with some things that aren't good. And to hide behind I'm doing the best that I can because it's kind of a cop out to go, I need to learn. I want to learn. Mm-hmm. I want to grow. It's that growth mindset piece. You know, I love this Maya Angelou quote that says, you know, do what you do until you know better and then do better. And, you know, I think a lot of times when I work with families is like, hey, I'm not judging you. I'm not shaming you. I'm not saying that you haven't done the best that you can. I'm just saying, like, if you want to create a holistic place for health, for growth, for maturity, for development, for discipleship is kind of how I look at it.
Yeah.
There's some things that I can set the stage for the work, but you've got to do the work. And the work is understanding how we were raised and what was good and what was bad, understanding how we engage in emotions and how do we explore our feelings and how do we engage in conversations and what kind of culture do we want to create around mental health? And are we a shaming culture? Are we a accepting culture? Are we a, you know, all those kind of things. And it's nobody, I mean, and that's where I think I get really frustrated with the counseling realm is that a lot of times we hold that knowledge as counselors until something goes wrong and then we give it to you. Mm. And my heart has always been like, you know, I don't want to be like the Gnostics in the New Testament. I want to be like, let's get this information out, not have this secret club that has all the information. So,
and I think it's so important because you said you're an integrationist. How do we take what we understand about mental, emotional health and also understand about the scriptures? And man, like, this is right after Romans 12:1, you know, lay down your life as a living sacrifice. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And we constantly have to bring our mind back to the promises of Scripture, but it's also like there's some things you learned as a kid that weren't helpful. And you need to renew our mind. And so I think you just kind of brought awareness. I actually, Carrie said, how do you think that going? I said, man, I loved it because I think that in that room, there were some conversations that got started that needed to be started.
Right. And that's the whole point, right? Is just set out some things to get started and then help people to do the work.
Yeah, I love it. So, man, it was an incredible night. Maybe you weren't there, but I think even through some of these questions, we might be able to catch some people up. So a couple of things are, here's in that event, we said, hey, what questions do you have? Mm-hmm. So we got a lot of questions, some very specific, but I think there was some threads through some of those questions. So I'm just going to kind of throw some questions, and Mark and I, knowing who we are, I'll ask some specific questions, but we'll also have conversations around those questions, as it were. So I think, Mark, as I began to look at that, I think this is a, I'm going to frame it as a question, but I'm also trying to ask a question that I want answered, is that we often want a creature and a culture. We want to create a culture of mental, emotional, and spiritual health. But also, that's what we want for our kids or maybe our workplaces or our larger family systems, our close friends. But sometimes the reason it's not there is because we don't even know how to do it.
Mm.
And I'm making that statement because these are things I've had to learn in my own life. I would make a statement, and I've actually heard you say this too. A lot of adults don't know what emotions they're feeling. They have no clue what the emotions and feelings are going on in their life. So why don't you talk a little bit about that? Because I think that's a part of your story as well, of knowing the difference between emotions and feelings and what to do with the things that come on us.
Well, if you were at the event, you know, the aha moment that emotions and feelings are two different things, I think sometimes catches people. You know, I was just earlier today just in Austin doing some stuff with parents at a Christian school and talking through this as well. And, you know, it's just you get that confused look. And so I think a lot of times we equate both as the same thing. Really, and here's what's interesting, our body's reaction and the meaning we make from that, it happens in a split second. So thoughts and feelings really go together. You can't differentiate those two. But, you know, an emotion is our body's response to something happening around us or inside of us. So for those of us that maybe have not a great relationship with a family member and we're in relationship with somebody around us that reminds us of that family member, you know, our internal status is thrown off. So our stomach starts turning or we get kind of jittery or we want to like leave the room or those kinds of things. That's an emotion. The meaning we make from that is a feeling. So I'm feeling scared. The word scared is a feeling based off of the body's response to what's going on. And many of us, unless we work at it, have a very low vocabulary.
Yeah.
When it comes to our feelings.
I agree. I agree with that wholeheartedly. And because I've worked with you, many mornings of my life, it starts with how am I feeling? Because it doesn't come natural.
Mm-hmm.
The emotions are stirring in your soul, but it doesn't come like, I'm actually not mad, I'm sad.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually takes a lot of effort, maybe not a lot of effort, maybe some stillness and some space to realize.
Intentionality. Maybe
you nailed it.
Yeah, yeah.
And if we're not aware of those things when we're moving through life, we can all of a sudden live out of our feelings instead of recognizing that they may or may not be true. And so I think that that's something really helpful is just to, you know, I asked a question, but I'm making a statement too. I'm a pastor, so leave me alone. And which is, I think that it's so important if you're going to create an emotional, spiritually healthy place that you know what's going on in your own soul. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Say that again. I want to make sure I got it completely, what you're saying.
If you're going to create an emotionally healthy space,
right,
you actually probably need to know what's going on in your own soul.
Yeah, yeah, you do. And I think I've adjusted this statement numerous ways, just depending on who I'm speaking to. But like, as parents, we really have a responsibility to know that if we want to disciple our kids well. Mm. And I say this very, very frankly, that we are the chief disciplers,
yeah,
of our kids. We can't put that off on the church. We can't put that off on, you know, our teachers or coaches or mentors. Those are all supports that help in the aiding of the discipling of our kids, but we are the chief disciplers of our kids. Disciple means to, discipleship is to teach, right? The root word.
Yeah.
And to teach means we have to have something to teach. We have to have a reservoir or a well to draw from in order to teach. And, you know, I think parents get so freaked out going, well, I don't know. And I'm like, here's the thing. You don't have to have it all together. You have to be on the journey and maybe, you know, 15, 20 steps ahead of your kid and teaching.
That's a great point.
You don't have to be at the top of the mountain and it arrived, because that doesn't work very well either. But you've got to be on the same path, figuring out the same things. And so I get really excited when I do counseling or coaching, and I've got couples coming in wanting to be better at this because they want to be better for their families. That's one of my greatest joys.
Man, I think, Mark, that probably should be highlighted and underscored in this process, in this conversation, because there's a lot of people have really difficult past. They may still have some, you know, sharp edges around these things, and they just want to give up because, like, I'm not there yet. I don't know how to help my kid. And it's like, if you're moving in the right direction, that's a beautiful thing.
Yes. If you're reading, no, okay, let's be honest. Like, you can be a self-help junkie, and that's not going to be beneficial either.
Yeah.
Because there are, you know, but if you lean into, you know, the resources that you have at Keystone, if you are engaging in, you know, finding some authors that you like Dallas Willard or Francis Schaeffer or, you know, John Eldridge or, you know,
yeah,
and go, okay, I'm Kirk Thompson. I'm going to bring guys in and people in that I know are exegetically sound and theologically, you know, but they also engage in the integration type of thing. Yeah. Okay. Those are good guys to read, but don't go pick up a book by, you know, Deepak Chopra or something like that on, you know, internal wellness.
Yeah.
It's not going to give you what you need.
Yeah.
And so I think you've got to be wise in how you grow. And I think a lot of times that's just, seeking out some wisdom and some support.
Yeah. I think it's good. I could go deeper and deeper on that, but I'm going to pause there. I'm going to get into some practical questions.
Yeah, Mark. Let's do it.
Here it is. In the age of the internet, what are some steps to help our children develop a healthy relationship with technology? I picked this one because when you talked to our staff, you talked about what happens online and some of the studies, and I thought, man, this is a really helpful conversation, a really helpful question.
Well, I love that question, and here's what I'm going to say, Brent. Like, be prepared for more questions from people because they may not like what I have to say. But so the average teen spends 10 to 12 hours on screens a day nationally. Mm-hmm. The use of screens, the overuse of screens actually helps create arrested development in our ability to develop emotional intelligence and pick up on micro expressions and engage in the development of the relational brain. And so if we don't put structure around tech, we are basically doing the opposite of what we're trying to do in this conversation. We're atrophying parts of the brain that engage in emotional reciprocity and emotional recognition. Relational reciprocity is a thing that doesn't happen. And so when parents ask me that question, I go, okay, so what are priorities for you and your family? Because, you know, the mentors are going to be different than the Mayfields, and that's not bad. But we've got to figure out what's best for our family culture. And so, you know, for example, my two youngest don't have any devices. We have a family iPad that gets, they get a half hour a day on that to play Adventure Academy or some kind of, you know, game if they want to. We have a Nintendo Switch that we play together as a family on Friday nights, but that's the only time it comes out. Mm. And my oldest, who just turned 16, has a Gab phone and has no desire for social media or an iPhone. And it's because of what we've chosen in our home to put focus on. Now, I have no problem with families that do something different, right? But you've got to figure out what's best for you guys. But you also have to look at a holistic piece. So I get chastised sometimes, well, you're not preparing your daughter for the real world. Well, we are. You know, when she gets her driver's license, she's going to get an iPhone. And, you know, and we're going to engage in those conversations about responsibility. She has no desire for social media. I even bring it up. You're like, you want to do a Facebook? And like, why would I do that? That's so stupid. Like, so, you know, but basically we've not put focus on those things. And her friends really don't really care. I think that's kind of Gen Alpha generation is kind of coming, getting away from some of that stuff too, which is not bad. There's a pendulum swing. But parents, here's where I will talk to parents specifically, where it gets difficult. You've got to abide by the culture of tech in your home too. And I think sometimes we're the biggest culprits with our iPhones and our phones and just mindlessly scrolling and watching reels and that kind of stuff too. So how do you lose your phone throughout the day? You know, I have a hard time with that just because it's attached to my schedule and my work and it's 3:30, so in an hour and a half it goes on do not disturb and it stays in my office until bedtime, and then after the kids are in bed I'll check and make sure I haven't missed anything, and then it's on do not disturb for the rest of the night, and then the weekend it's on do not disturb from Friday night all the way through Monday morning. Now obviously you can't do that as a pastor. That's a little bit different with, you know, your needs and that kind of stuff, but again, that's what's worked for our family.
I think what's most important here, Mark, is to say it's a problem, and how are we going to manage it? Like, have to realize I'm in a battle. The gravitational pull of technology, if unabated, will pull you in places that are very unhelpful. And as a parent, you've got to step into that space. And I mean, we've approached it differently with our kids. You know, are your kids in public school or are they not? And then there's some kids that could care less about social media and kids that fly to it like a moth to the flame. And so you have to know and just realize what battle you're in.
Well, and I will say this, that if we don't create some structure around it, it actually creates dopamine hits similar to that of low levels of cocaine.
Yeah.
When they're looking to see if anybody's liked or posted something new or those kind of things. So we've just got to diversify it to a place where, it's important, but it's not life-altering. Because there's been times where I've worked with families, they've taken phones away from their kids, and you thought somebody had died.
Yeah.
Like, that's the extreme.
Well, but for the kid, someone did die, right? I mean, that it was a world outside of the world that they were actually in, like, that they were had an incorporeal, like, they were not, anyways, we could talk more.
No, I'm with you. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm a big fan of Dallas Willard. Like, his Spirit of the Disciplines and the reason that we do spiritual disciplines because God made us incorporeal are foundational to the way I chase Jesus. But
that's a different story.
Let's go to the next question, because there's some well-meaning parents, and this is a really great question for a parent who has a desire to care for their kids, but also help them develop. So here's the question. When the gut instinct is to comfort our kids when something is wrong or they are struggling, how do we allow them to sit with negative emotions to allow them to be comfortable with them? And the idea, and it seems like the question is, in some senses, I want to rescue my kid from everything hard. Yeah. Do I need to let my kid sit with some stuff?
There's some interesting words there, because comfortable and negative are two words that I don't like. We can create safety for our kids and still not have them be comfortable. And there are no such things as negative emotions. So I would love, so I think for that parent that asked that question, I think it's a good question. Comfort means we want them to feel better. Creating safety allows them to process in a place that they know they're not going to be damaged or hurt worse. And so when things happen, how do we create safety for our kids to process, to be mad, to ask questions, to doubt, to rage against them? I mean, it's a psalmist's lament if we want to create a space for them to do that, right? So that means that we've got to do the work so that we don't jump in and try to fix. So one of my favorite responses to my kids is, if I see that they're not doing well, I'm ready to listen when you want to talk. So it creates space that they're not going to get a lecture, they're not going to get fixed, but they have a place to process. Mm. So that creates resiliency, that creates grit, that creates the ability to sit with the tension and be okay with the tension, which I know most of my clients and most of my students hate that phrase, sit with the tension, because it's really going, I want this to be better and be over, but there's so much I can learn in the wrestling. Negative emotions don't happen. Our body's just telling us what's trying to go on. What we do with that can be negative or positive, if that makes sense, right?
So, can you give a practical example of that?
I'm angry because of a situation. There's an injustice rising up in me. I'm angry because of a situation. It's okay to be angry. There's nothing wrong with being angry. Now, if I take my anger out on somebody or something, that's when it becomes negative. Yeah. So allowing our kids to use their words and be angry. I'd rather have my kids sit with me and just yell and scream and, say some things that maybe they don't really mean, but they're getting it out, but they're doing it in the safety of my presence versus acting out on somebody else. Mm. So sadness. Tears are not a bad thing. But if we allow that to move into self-loathing, there's negative. Woe is me, nobody loves me, that kind of stuff. Versus just going, okay, it's okay to be sad. And so that's where I love in my Path to Wholeness book, I talk a little bit about the process of lament. And so how do we teach our kids that, it's a very much a biblical practice. Because it allows us to get those emotions, those feelings out.
Yeah.
And then, okay, Lord, I don't get it.
Yep.
Still trust you because you're good. You haven't changed. But this really sucks. I'm not sure what to do with it. So I hope that answers the question for that person. But
I think it does. And I think this next question, when you talked a little bit about safety, I've heard you speak in other places where I think this comes up. This is about attachment and kind of a similar question. Mm-hmm. And I think I'll ask this and maybe kind of summarize it, maybe another way to say it. But with attachment, meeting needs is an important part of the circle. What does it look like to meet needs without always giving into what they're demanding or what they perceive they need?
Yeah. So so we talk about this when it comes to a baby. So I'll use that example. So when a baby is... when they have a need, right? So they cry.
Yep.
That's how a baby communicates their need. They cry. They scream. They cry. we think as parents that we have to figure out what's going on in order for that need to be met. Are they dirty? I'll change their diaper. Their needs met. Here's where the need is met. You show up.
Wow.
Going to the baby's side, going to their crib and picking them up and going, hey, hey bud, hey, sweetheart, like, what's going on? Mm. You know, and you're, and are you, you know, and then you might take, you know, if you're like me, you might take 5-10 minutes to try to figure out what's going on, where my wife's like, oh, they're hungry. Oh, okay. Yeah. You know, but by just showing up, that need is met.
Wow.
And showing up doesn't mean you're fixing it. Showing up, you know, with our adolescent kids and our middle school kids, it doesn't mean that we're fixing it. It just means we're present.
Yeah.
We've created, we've seen them, seen what's going on. We've created some safety. And by just having a safe place for them to wrestle with things, they're feeling soothed, whether or not they get, the, get it fixed.
Yeah. I'm just looking back on some notes from when you went to our staff, and you're actually, you said the big things with secure attachment is that they feel seen, safe, and soothed. Mm-hmm. And our presence does more than you could say or some of the problems that we could fix.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think there's parents that, you know, they're like, well, I'm going to spoil my kid. Like, no. Like, if you're fixing everything for them, if you're giving them, if you're not letting them sit with things, if you're not letting them wrestle with hard things, then yeah, you're doing some not so good things.
Yeah.
But showing up is awesome.
That's good. And I think what a burden that takes off of a parent who feels like I've got to fix all my kids' needs, especially if you haven't dealt with your junk as a parent and you feel like it's now my job to fix everything in my kid's life.
Right.
And, but to know that you're building some deep relational joy there or deep relational connection. If you may not fix it, but they feel seen, safe, and soothed through the process.
Think about it. I mean, wouldn't you want, so let's say your kid makes a mistake and they vape or they try some alcohol at a party or you take a hit of marijuana. Wouldn't you want to be the first one they call because they know that you're safe and that you're going to not chastise them, but go, okay, let's make sure that you're safe and cared for. And then we're going to sit with the consequences of what just happened and we're going to allow those things to happen. But I'm not going to make you feel stupid or ashamed because you already feel that way. You know, and I think that's what we're talking about here.
So good. All right. You made this statement, I remember, in the talk about gentle parenting. And so one of the questions, I think you addressed it in the room, but I think it'd be helpful in this conversation too. Gentle parenting is a concept. To be honestly, I'm a little bit past that stage of parenting.
Sure.
So I'm not that the algorithm isn't feeding me that information necessarily. But can you explain gentle parenting and why you're against it?
Well, it's, I guess in some ways, gentle parenting is not, I think it's, in a lot of ways, it's the rescuing piece. It's the not wanting to disrupt our kids' inner rhythms, you know, and we want to make sure that they're, you know, not being told no is a big thing. But I think a lot of times it's also we don't want to raise our voices with our kids. We don't want them to see us disrupted and that kind of stuff. And to me, it's like, yeah, I don't want any parent yelling at their kid. Like, yelling is not good. But for my daughter or my son to see me disrupted and dysregulated and to work through the process of going, Dad made a mistake. Dad recognized the mistake he made. Dad's coming to me and apologizing. And Dad's really working hard not to do that again. I think is an amazing kind of imprinting model where I think, you know, gentle parenting takes a lot of that stuff out. There's, I think, you know, they say that gentle parenting is a way to raise healthy, happy, confident kids. And I don't doubt it, but we've got to let life happen. And we've got to make sure that we are working on reconciliation and forgiveness and modeling some of these things. You know, and it's sometimes gentle parenting is, well, I'm not going to give you a time out. I'm going to go give you a time to do something that you enjoy to distract you from your bad behavior or this, that, or other thing versus having these consequences that we sit with. They don't focus on, you know, discipline as much as they do reward. You know, some of the things I do like about gentle parenting is that it helps increase children's self-awareness around, yeah, you know, emotional things and that kind of stuff. But I think we've again gone to a pendulum swing,
yeah,
where, you know, we want this to, you know, and so what is that going to create? Looking at scripture, I think, and seeing how, you know, Deuteronomy 6, you know, you look at, you know, just a bunch of different great models, even Isaiah 61 of, you know, the model of Christ of binding up the brokenhearted, like those types of things are great models of how it might look to be a parent.
Yeah, I mean, we can clearly raise kids that are aware of, self-aware, aware of their emotions, but we can still tell them no. Mm-hmm. And face difficult consequences. I'm going to ask another question really quick, Mark. And I think this is tying back to my first question. Because there, for good, I think for good, you've in the news, we have a mental health crisis, post-COVID, post-2020 election, all those things like mental health, emotional health, skyrocketed in awareness that we need some of these things. And so I think there's a lot of people, especially people of faith, that were suspicious of maybe counseling, that were suspicious that of mental health things. And now they're waking up and going, I might need to attend to those things, or I experienced this and I have not processed it. I've put it under the rug and now it's affecting my parenting. And now it's not a stigma to go to a therapist or counseling to get help. So the question that is, what are some of your tips for finding a good therapist, and what should you look for? Now, let me start this. If you guys need help, if you'll go to the care page at keystonelife.com/care, I believe, I'll make sure that link is in the show notes here, we can help you establish that. And if we could help you, maybe point you in the right direction. But I do think it's like, what are you looking for? And then how do you know if you're clicking with your counselor, therapist? Wow. Like, just give some wisdom with that.
Yeah, it's all about relationship. It's just like, you know, engaging in a friendship. And so I always tell clients or people, potential clients, or people looking for counseling, write a list of things that are important to you and go in to see if that person will. Most counselors should do a 15 to 30 minute discovery call just to interview each other and make sure it's a good fit.
Yep.
And then if your counselor, prospective counselor, doesn't say these words, hey, this might not be a good fit, let's give it a couple of sessions to see if you feel comfortable and see if it's not a good fit, you're not going to hurt my feelings. It's, you know.
Yeah.
This kind of sounds familiar with what I did with you guys in coaching, right? I mean, it's just like, hey, this is important, and this is important on your end, not my end. And you need to make sure that you feel comfortable in this space being challenged and and so I always tell families that sometimes if they don't provide that 30-minute thing, go find somebody else. Mm. If they don't say those kinds of things, ask that question. But come in with about 5 or 6 questions that you might want to ask about, you know, their views on different things. Obviously, just don't say, I'm going to find a Christian therapist, because they might not be good either because their theology is poor or where they were trained and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So still take in those questions. But then give it like, usually I always do 3 sessions and a review, and then if we're not good at that third session, then we're done. I'll help you find somebody else. But then after that, it's every 6 sessions, we'll kind of just come back and how things are going.
Yeah, I think, this is something I can speak personally about you, because the reason I got to you is I was talking to someone who's like, I want to meet with someone who understands a lead pastor's world and mm-hmm. someone who will not coddle me but will look me in the face and say, stop it, Brent. Like, mm-hmm. that's who I want to hang out with. But I want direct feedback. And I think that's one of the reasons someone said, you need to hang out with Mark, because Mark knows your world and it'll be really helpful for you. So I think that's really helpful. But I think it's also really good. Like, we actually partner, there's several really good Christian counseling centers mm-hmm. around where we're at that we can refer people to. But it's possible that you sit with someone, you're like, I just don't want to go talk with him. That mm-hmm. we just don't jive. Mm-hmm. And I think that's okay to find someone who you feel like walking through a season with. But
yeah,
Go ahead, finish that.
No, I said, no, you're right. I think that's really good. And it's always good to get a referral from somebody that's already been someplace.
Yeah.
That you trust.
Now let's talk about, there's some bad therapy out there. So what are maybe some things to look at beyond, besides, is this a fit? What are some things that you would say, look out for this?
Yeah, so I'm not sure who's picking it up right now, but I wrote an article just recently, an op-ed on the slippery slope of affirming care. And it was aimed towards, you know, the LGBTQ plus, you know, conversation, but it wasn't to attack. It was just this idea that as counselors, we are trained. We don't affirm and we don't give advice. We sit with people. We listen, we direct, we guide with questions. We don't have an end-all, be-all outcome in mind for you. You tell us, here's the goals I want to work on. Okay, we're going to help you work on those goals. I don't have a Mark Mayfield agenda for my clients. I have my therapeutic training, you know, 2.5 years of undergrad or graduate school and, you know, 4 years, 5 years of PhD. I have that training to inform my stuff.
Yep.
But I'm not going to say, well, this is what I think is best for Brent. I'm going to take what you give me in session and I'm going to challenge, this is not congruent to what you said you want to work on or who you want to be. But there are counselors out there that will engage in their biases and they'll, you know, you know, will have an agenda. I don't know if that answers your question, but that's just, I think, something that you need to look out for.
Yeah, that's good. Mark, I think that, again, the purpose of today's conversation is not to solve everything. I think a lot of people, when they hear the title of creating a culture of mental, emotional, and spiritual health, they're like, I want to solve that problem and move on. I think these are just conversations to help keep us reminding, because, man, the emotional and spiritual health when I was raising toddlers is radically different than the emotional and spiritual health I needed raising teenagers. And the point here is, let's just stay in the game, raising kids for the glory of God, amen, and not allow our emotions and our mental struggles to hijack that, but that we deal with those appropriately so that we can be there for our kids and that we can continue to raise them to know and follow Jesus.
Yes. Amen. Amen.
Amen. Well, Mark, thanks so much for being with us. Super thankful to hang out with you again and see you. It's fun to look at you as we have this conversation. So thanks so much for being a part of our conversation today. Yeah. If you'd like to know more about Keystone in general, hear sermons, or listen to more conversations, please visit keystonelife.com. Until next time, keep the conversation going.